Scott Price, and this is the APV podcast for October the 19th, 2017. I'm really excited tonight. The last couple of podcasts have been just me. And while I find that really entertaining, I don't assume that other people always feel the same way. And so I've got some of the brain trust of APV here tonight with me. And we're going to try and do this on a regular basis. We'll probably do different kinds of podcasts over time. Sometimes it'll be a one-on-one interview. Sometimes it'll be something like this. And sometimes it'll just be me yakking. But tonight, I've got some great friends here. And I'm going to just ask everybody to introduce themselves. And we'll start with you, Jack.
Hi, I'm Jack R. Johnson.
Kathy Walker.
William Vance Thomas.
Excellent. Ooh, you are working on your radio.
Yeah, he's got that thing down.
Yes, I am. Yeah,
I'm very impressed. Well, excellent. And all APV members for years and years now and have worked on various projects with us. I'm excited to have them here, and we're going to talk about some current events. And first, I'm going to do the little APV calendar for you guys. And some of this stuff, you'll have to check our website because it is... Some of it is like TBA, or is it TBA? Yeah, or yeah, TBD. Yeah. TBD is to be decided.
Decided or determined, right.
TBA is to be announced. Okay, so we're announcing it, and it's kind of decided, but some of it's still a little up in the air. So, or I just don't have the information. So we're going to talk at the end of the program about our October salon, with when we were really happy to have LeVar Stoney, the mayor of Richmond, come and talk to us. Our November salon is going to be November 12th, so it'll be after the election. And we're going to be featuring themes directed at the Latino community in Richmond. But I do not, at this particular moment, have the names of our guests. They are set up. But I don't know exactly. I don't know who they are. So I will, as soon as I do, check our website. I think it's going to be really good. The reason I don't specifically know, usually I do know, but this is another member of the organization has been putting this together, and so I get reports that it's going really well, but I don't get a lot of the information, or if I get it, I forget it. You know what I'm saying? And that is November 12th, and of course, that's always at Helen's Restaurant in Fan. Wonderful folks who give us access to the place on their night off. And that's from 6:15 to 9 on November 12th. And then in December, we have our holiday party, too, which we'll talk more about in future podcasts. Also, I think it's November 12th. I may have to fix that. I may have to fix that in post-production. It's going to be November 13th. The salon's November 13th. Thank you very much.
All
yes.
All right.
And then...
Glad we could help you out there.
Thank you very much. By looking at me...
We're right on top of that.
The way you guys were looking at me, I knew that I needed to check myself before I wrecked myself.
Well, there you
as
go.
As the kids say.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's on the 13th. On the 12th, on the night before that, which is a Sunday night, APV will be at the Camel.
Oh, cool.
We're having a benefit. We did a couple of those last year.
Did Stephen say it?
No, this isn't Stephen. This is going to be, I don't know again. This is another TBA.
Okay.
Because Dobie is putting this together.
And he's got three bands lined up.
He's got bands lined up, but I do not know what they are. Okay. And that is more my ignorance of the Richmond music scene than anything. So that's on the 12th. And then on December 16th, APV is a proud participant in the Social Justice Forum that we'll be holding, I believe, at St. Paul's with a number of other organizations through the Virginia Civic Engagement Table. And we do a lot of work with them. And this is was originally scheduled for September, and we're going to do it in December. There were a bunch of stuff happening in September. So that is our calendar. We're very excited about that, and we'll have more information as we get closer. And we're going to be talking about economic justice in particular.
Good.
So we'll be talking about wage theft and affordable housing, and we'll be talking about minimum wage, things like that. So that is the calendar part, and we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we will move to our first topic, which, as you can probably guess, is everybody who does a blog's first topic, and it's the antics of our imbecile president. we don't pull a lot of punches on this blog, baby. We go right for the jugular.
I think there's a call coming in from the imbeciles of America.
Yeah, I can live with that.
I think
that.
There's a complaint.
They never.
Yeah, so we don't want to be.
He's not one of us.
He's not.
We're legit.
That's right.
Who can blame them? So, we're going to take a little break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to APV Podcast. This is the podcast of the Alliance for a Progressive Virginia, and we'll be back in just a second. APV Podcast with APV on the air, we've been calling this, which I'll have to fill that in post-production earlier on. Everything is fixed in, I just want to be clear, everything is fixed in post-production. Everything.
Do we have Muzak?
Yes. I mean, don't break the illusion, because I want people are listening to this, and I can have them going, you know, oh, they're probably listening to that fine intro outro music, you know. And it's like, no, we're not. You know, technically, we just stopped for a second here, and then picked it right back up. But for you guys, it was like a completely different experience. So, our first topic, our first segment is something I think we're all experiencing, and I hear a lot about, and we certainly see it, I see it from a lot of people on social media, and that is this sort of idea of Trump fatigue. Mm. PTSD, or which is President Trump stress disorder, you know?
Yeah.
It's a real thing, and I think it's dangerous, because I've heard people who are furious and upset and have been since November and et cetera, who are kind of tuning things out now. And, I mean, people need to take care of themselves, don't you? I mean, you know, psychologically and emotionally and stuff. But at the same time, I really worry that there is a sense that they're kind of doing this on purpose. You know?
See, I think Trump was sort of a secret weapon that the Republicans had, and it's like a stink bomb or something. And they put him out there, and
unfortunately, it went off in their pocket.
Well, right. But what happens is they put him out there, and he is such a mess, both, you know, emotionally, psychologically, intellectually. He's just a disaster. And people just get tired of fighting him, and he's worn out. He's wearing out, maybe, the opposition. And folks, and I know what you're saying, Scotty, folks that are good friends of mine who are activists too, are simply tuning out, and they're just saying, I can't take it anymore, because it's really outrage fatigue, and it's over and over and over again. It's like, what's the outrage du jour? Oh, let's see, he insulted the Gold Star family. Well, that's kind of Trump does.
Well, he's done that.
Right. This is the second time,
he's
actually,
even,
right?
He's recycling his bits now.
Right.
It's like he's run out, you know. Yeah. Oh, we don't have anything new planned for today. Oh, just insult, you know, the family of a dead veteran, and that'll do.
Yeah, my wife was living in New York, I guess, in the 80s and 90s, when his face was everywhere. It was like on the back. She said she was riding the subway, and she realized that she had to leave New York when she was riding the subway, and she saw the person reading, it was some national magazine, the front of the cover was Trump, and then when she turned it over, the back of it was Trump. And she knew at that moment she could not be in New York anymore. She was leaving, and she left, you know, effectively not just to get away from Trump, but that was an ancillary benefit. That was definitely something she had in the back of her head, was to get out of this sort of Trump world. Now we're all living in it, and maybe the whole world's living in this sort of Trump disaster.
I've never understood the attraction. I know we had friends that used to watch The Apprentice and Celebrity Apprentice, and one of them I watched once because I was at her house, and it's like I smoked pot once, but I didn't inhale. That's how I feel saying that.
So you did smoke pot. Is this on the record?
Yeah, that gets edited out later.
Yeah, that can get edited out.
But
we can fix that in post-production.
And we're back.
It was the most Mickey Mouse show I have ever seen.
Oh, the Apprentice?
Yeah. There were people, and their challenge was, I don't know, to come up with some sort of thing on the boardwalk, maybe some little thing that was supposed to look like a carnival, but they made it out of cardboard, and it kind of looked like the decorations we made for the dance when I was in seventh grade.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and it was so Mickey Mouse. I never really understood why this was supposed to be a demonstration of his brilliance at anything. He had people who were operating at a junior high school level come in and compete with each other, and then he threw off the one that was still operating at an elementary school level. And people behaved badly enough that it got really high ratings. And
but isn't that part of the thing for him? Is that I read a thing recently, and they said that for a lot of the people who voted for Trump, Trump is like the sort of stupid person's idea of what a rich person is like.
Yeah, he's an actor.
You know,
ultimately. A bad actor, but an actor.
All of his crap is covered in gold, and, you know, he's, you know, that sort of. Remember the lifestyles of the rich and famous kind of crap? Right. It's like, so here's the hot tub, and here's the hot tub that's in my hot tub, and here's the gold-plated hot tub in the hot tub that's in my other hot tub.
It's a wonderful picture of him in his penthouse or whatever it is in Trump Towers. And I think I thought it was Vanity Fair that carried this picture. Everything is in gold.
It looks like a whorehouse.
Exactly.
You know, I mean,
that's exactly what I was thinking. It's like, this is like some boudoir out of somebody's idea of what elegance is from Louis the 14th. But it comes off as exactly that. As some kind of cheap, reconstructed whorehouse kind of decoration.
And I know that part of this is a sort of elitism on my part, you know, and looking down my nose. You know, I've been struggling with this since a year, you know.
So I guess my question after all of this, I mean, so we've all expressed a considerable fatigue with this, and all of my friends have, but it gets to your point earlier, Scott, how do we deal with this effectively so that we can still stay engaged as activists?
Yeah.
Because let's face it, we need to stay engaged as activists, or it's going to get worse, right?
Yeah. I mean, at one level, don't you all think, I mean... You know, he's incompetent, but, you know, you can't, I mean, he's the president of the United States. He's the most powerful, Donald Trump is the most powerful man in the world.
Shudder.
And just, you know.
Requisite shudder.
Yeah, requisite. I'll put some post-production shudder.
Thank you. So we definitely need a shudder in there. That's sort of like a Halloween story almost, right? Very nice.
And so, you know, we can't take it for granted. You can't sort of shrug it off. But I don't know. I mean, that's one of the things we wanted to talk about, that sense of he's just beating us down with this vulgarity and this petty stupidity.
And the distracting kind of stuff. Well, for example, with this Gold Star Family thing that has now become front and center again because John Kelly came out today and said, defended Trump, essentially.
Oh, did he?
Yeah,
okay.
He came out.
I was wondering how that was going to go. I didn't see
It was interesting in the defense, and it was a plausible defense, which, given the Trump administration, if he gets to plausible, that's just amazing, right? That's as good as a 100% on any given quiz. But no, Kelly came out and he said, I told Trump to say that, you signed up for this, basically.
Right.
That's called someone has to take a fall for this.
Right.
It won't be me,
because
I will never take a fall, because I'm not
that's
wrong.
Right. But here's the thing,
Mr.
is
President.
Kelly is actually competent. So when he did this, he did it in such a way, like I'm listening to it and I was like, oh, that's working. He's shutting these people down. And if you listen to the newscast tomorrow or whenever it comes up again, you're going to be like, oh, he put that fire up. And he did. I think he effectively put that fire up.
Oh, I don't know about that.
But it distracts.
Okay, we'll see what happens.
We're so easily distracted. Oh, a competent person told him that. Number one, you're the president. You're not supposed to be told what to do like a little bitch. Leave that in. Number two, that's still not make it right.
No, of course not.
Just because the competent, I'm doing air quotes, the competent person did it doesn't mean that telling the grieving widow as she goes to pick up her husband's dead body.
Yeah.
She's in the car on the way.
Yeah.
Right. Say, oh, well, he knew what he was signing up for, you know?
Right.
No.
Well, I'm sure that
the
way
never...
Trump delivered it was very different from the way he was told to, if that, in fact,
that's what he told General Kelly. You knew what you signed up for. Now go out there and cover my ass.
That's cute.
No,
that's right.
You know, but also, I mean, and you know, part of this, though, I mean, the Twitter account and all that, is the role played by the press and the media, who ought to know better. I complain all the time, and I'm probably going to do a podcast where I just eat the NPR politics podcast.
Are you gonna bitch slap Cokie Roberts?
No, Cokie's on there now. Cokie's on there now and again. They all seem like such sweet, nice young journalists, and
right.
But it's so, and they're like, well, you know, the president doesn't always seem to say, you know, maybe he, you know, doesn't always seem to mean what he says, and blah blah blah. It's like, no, he's a effing liar. You know, he's a liar.
I mean, it's an intellectual question. What kind of liar is he? Is he a pathological liar? Is he? Does he lie because he doesn't know what truth is?
Yes.
Does he lie because he doesn't understand truth?
So far, you've covered the same thing three times.
There are so many different ways. Does he lie out of spite? Does he lie out of insecurity? Does he lie because his penis is so small? You know, it's just there are so many reasons he might be lying like this.
I thought it was his hands that were so
small. Well, you know what they say.
You know what they say, man.
Yeah, when Scotty edits this, I said penis, he's going to be like, hands.
I'll give you ready.
Hands is more
ready. 1, 2, 3. Hands. And we're back.
No. It is just. But they follow whatever the shiny ball. They, you know, and it's like so. You know.
What?
You know. I mean, yes, we all know that. But
squirrel.
This was their. This
squirrel.
Was that
right.
moment. This was that moment. You know, when he got elected, when. I think, and I will say, if you look at like the New York Times and the Washington Post and some other you know organizations who are doing good work on the Russia Gate and things like that, yeah, you know, there's still good journalism being done, but so much of it is just reaction, and so much of it is this weird sort of credulity and this weird thing. Well, he's the president, so we have to be nice about it. No, and we've talked about this
again
and again.
Who made that rule?
You can't normalize this. He's
well,
not normal.
The problem is it's kind of built into the institution, I think, because you have people that look at the office. They're not even looking at the person. And quite frankly, Scott, and you know this is true, they get a lying of shit from presidents forever. They've always known. If you're in the press room, you're in that pack, and you're listening to that press spokesman, they know that the lying that's being given them is effectively that. It's a lying. Now, some people do it with more nuance and more flair, but for the most part, that's always a lie. So the press has got to... They're always in this sort of adapting to a lie mode. The difference is Trump's lies are egregious and dangerous and vulgar and all the other things that we can think of. The other lies are essentially spin, so there's just no gradation. They're just not qualifying it correctly.
Well, I think another part of the problem is that that might very well be the case, but a long time ago, the press conference wasn't the only source of news. You know, now, like, nobody researches anything much anymore.
Right, yeah.
So, the other part of the news that would balance just the press conference, which is a platform for propaganda, essentially, the other side has been kind of destroyed by number of things, so you know, we don't get the balance that we should be getting.
I was talking about this the other day with
Nance.
You know where I'm going. I was thinking about Daniel Borstein's book on The Image and how he talks about the pseudo event, and this is, you know, from 30, 40, 50 years ago. I don't even know when he read it, 60s or 50, 70s maybe. But he talks about the growth back then, the birth and growth of the event that only exists for the media. And so if we distill the Trump presidency down into what actually would take place if there was a news camera there, or, you know, the echo chamber of Facebook in our news feeds, or Twitter and the whole Twitterverse, what actually happens? I think like one remedy for Trump fatigue is to scrape away the press conferences, which only exist because the press covers them, right. And all this, you know, fighting back and forth on Twitter and the he said and the she said. You scrap all that and see what is actually going on that would exist even if all the media vanished tomorrow.
Right.
And that's the essence of the presidency, and that's some scary shit right there.
Yeah, that's excellent, actually, Catherine, because... Catherine, I'm sorry.
but,
yeah, we'll fix that.
Kathleen, but, no, I mean...
I got the first four the letters dress. Right, right?
I swear, I must
first five
confess.
Letters right. Anyhow, the thing that is essential, I think, for activists is to really concentrate on what he's doing, what the activity is, what the policy orientation is, and how that's interacting with Congress and how that's all playing out. Because that's actually what's going to affect our lives. Whether he insults a Gold Star family or not, that's, you know, ultimately not going to affect us directly. But what will affect us directly is if he gets these tax cuts through, if he destroys Obamacare,
yeah.
if he manages to, you know, get that repeal and replace thing going on, all of that.
Ah, the barking dog.
Shut up, Bruno.
The barking dog tells us it is we need to take another break. How do I stop the dog barking dog?
Shut up. What do we got, a pit bull?
Shut
or what
up.
Do we got going on here?
No, that is... Progress, the APV bar, the APV podcast dog.
Okay.
Progress. I just made that up.
Very good.
Progress.
Like
that's very
progress.
Good.
What a noble. What a noble name.
I know.
Yeah. Good. Hey, right, Progress.
No, I like
thank you. Good dog, Progress. Give him some food.
So we're gonna take a little break and we'll come back and fish into this some more because I think there's a lot to unpack because I think Kathy made a really good point, and I want to talk more about that because in a weird way, you know, the Trump presidency has, you know, we've had sort of television presidents before.
Oh yeah.
But this is just like the social media presidency, and there's, I mean, he hasn't done crap. So we're going to take a little break, APV on the air, the APV podcast, and we will be back in a minute with more of us saying smart stuff. Here with Vance and Jack and Kathy, and this is the APV on the air, and this is the podcast of the Alliance for Progressive Virginia. So we were talking about his boorishness, the president, and I mean, I think what's fascinating is, I mean, he has done nothing. I mean, if you look
at
it,
that's the counterbalance to the threat.
He's sort of done sins of omission in the sense that, for instance, he's not filling cabinet posts and he's not filling posts that are important. And for instance, he's built a cabinet of people who are like literally jokes.
Yeah,
like
has
Betsy
not
DeVos,
announced the time.
It's like
for
let's make
Obamacare
Betsy DeVos the education, you know,
right.
because she hates. The education department.
Right,
yeah.
Or Pruitt for APV.
It's like
yeah.
Bizarro
yeah.
Superman. I mean, it really is Bizarro
it
Superman.
It is Bizarro World, yeah. And he is the Bizarro president. But, I mean, on the one hand, he's getting very little done.
Good.
Thank God.
Yeah. So far.
And the Republican Party in general.
Well, the Republican Party is in a state of...
In the Congress,
in this weird state of collapse, even as it is triumphant.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
we'll talk about this when we talk about the election that's coming up in November.
Mm. And they're all running to him, then running away, and
yeah,
running to him,
well,
running away.
This is something that the Republicans have done to themselves over the course of 30 or 40 years.
Right.
Which is they've created these monsters, and now these are they've told us that government doesn't work. That government can't do anything. And they've said that over and over again, and they've convinced their base that that's in fact true. Well, the trouble is that you have to, if you want to do things that they want to do, you have to be able to govern, and they can't even do that.
Right.
They how many times did the House and Republicans in the House and Senate vote to repeal Obamacare? Like 50 times?
Yeah.
I mean, it was an absolute joke.
Yeah.
And could they do it now that they have the have everything in line?
Nope.
Not a lick. They tried again and again. They'll continue to try, but they're incompetent. They're not. The Republican leadership is an absolute joke from the top all the way down.
But
and yet
there are some dangerous people in there.
Well,
I mean, the fact that they couldn't repeal Obamacare sort of gets to the root of their problem, which is that they're in a little bit of a civil war, right? I mean, you've got the Trump extremists who really want to just stick it to effectively the American people, certainly to repeal Obamacare. Come hell or high water, they don't care about what happens ultimately to any of the people that are going to be affected, and more importantly, from the establishment Republican point of view, to the insurance companies.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's really where that struggle is, right?
Yeah.
It's between sort of the Republican establishment of old, which is concerned with big business, making money, and having, you know, a certain level of stability, too, because you can't really have a great capitalist system if you're all over the place.
Market wants stability.
Market absolutely wants stability. And then you have the Trumpist. Is that the right phrase for these guys?
Trumpeters.
The crazy folks.
The crazy people.
And we need a new term like lumpen proletariat.
Trumpen proletariat.
Trumpen lumpen.
Okay, right. Yeah, and these guys they don't care about end results, I don't think. It's almost as though they're an emotional response to whatever.
They want revenge.
Maybe that's it.
They want payback for the slights that they feel that society has given them. This is what drives me nuts when I hear people go, you've got to understand them.
What's happened to working class
white people and stuff. It's like, no,
I
don't.
I know plenty of working class white people. Some of them are at this table.
I'm working class. I think everybody here works. So,
Okay.
Is anybody here rich enough not to work?
Hello?
No, but I will call myself middle class at this point.
You're going to call yourself middle class.
I'm not.
I will call myself.
Excellent. Molto eccellente.
In terms of education and income, I have to call myself middle class. It is false to call myself working class.
Excellent. There you go. Very good.
Yeah.
Moving on up.
There's a sense that I'm married to
middle class. I'm married into the middle class.
Look at you.
I know.
You know, there's that sense the way white nationalism and stuff like that has cropped up and stuff.
Yeah.
This sense of grievance and this sense of what Steve Bannon. I am
never, ever, ever a fan of Hillary, ever. But I think she got trashed unfairly for her deplorables comment. I don't think it was very well phrased, but if you look at any survey, any reputable survey taken of America, about a third of America's crazy. Seriously. I mean, about a third of America thinks adultery is really awesome, and about a third of America is all for beating children until they're bloody, and about a third of America, thinks that, yes, UFOs are
and
regularly...
Angels, and they believe in angels.
Regularly proving
and they don't
people.
Understand why the federal budget shouldn't be run the same way a family runs its budget at the kitchen table.
Right.
Because they're stupid.
I'm not even talking anything like that. I'm talking crazy shit.
Yeah.
Crazy stupid.
Yeah.
Really crazy.
And, I mean, some of those people...
These are the people that think you treat a sunburn by sitting out in the sun.
Right.
So these are... You laugh, but I had a neighbor. The tales I could tell.
Yeah.
I think that she was pointing out that, we do have a certain percentage of the population that is not in touch with any sort of science that's been developed in the last 300 years. They aren't really conversant with, the basic building blocks of democracy. They're all for capitalism, but they don't, they couldn't tell you really how it's defined. And they can't sort it out from a political system either. So,
well, and we talked about this a couple of salons ago, the idea that they live in a zero-sum world.
Yeah.
And that they believe that if things are going bad for them, it's because somebody has what belongs to them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that somebody is getting it because I'm not getting what I want.
Right.
It's because somebody, and usually that person doesn't look like them.
Yeah.
Or doesn't, mm-hmm. you know, speaks when it doesn't speak, you know, the English that they pretend to think they speak, you know, and so it's just built for them. It's built for them. And he is the culmination. Trump is the culmination of that. Because
they've
been doing this. Yeah. They've been playing this
been
song
playing that to
for
them.
A long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
But they got these people got tired of the dog whistles. And they want to actually do it. You know, they want to wreck everything. And make the lazy black people pay and make the immigrants pay and once they get going, the Jews and I mean all of the blocks that have always been there start falling into place for these people.
Mm.
And that's because they're not a majority in the country. They're not even a large minority in the country, but because nobody votes in this, because I blame the Democrats as much as everybody else.
Oh, sure,
you know, I mean,
sure.
they're part of the problem here, but you know, we're in a really, really scary situation because more and more our country, our politics and our country is being run by the lowest common denominator. It's absolutely infuriating.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's becoming a platitude lately to say that. You know, we're at a point where people have taken the idea of democracy to mean that ignorance is equal to knowledge. And it's not.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's your opinion. Well, my opinion is that, you know, the sun is a small piece of, you know, is a match that God lights every morning and tosses across the sky.
Flat earthers are gaining ground. I mean, you know, there was that funny Onion article a couple years ago about
skeleton people.
No, not that one. Not that one. The one that was making fun of creationism by talking about intelligent falling. You know, like
I haven't heard this.
Oh, it's so hilarious! You got to look it up because
okay.
it's
perhaps
like,
we can link
oh,
it on the web.
Did Lucifer?
There you
did
go.
Lucifer fall? You know, well, how is that defined scientifically? And talks about gravity in the way that people talk about evolution.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. Right?
It's hilarious.
Yeah,
it's
right.
Absolutely, it's not a joke anymore.
No,
you
and
know,
it's
one of those
not,
things where the laughter
the
suddenly
is,
dies.
And again, because the media helps this crap. You know,
well, he said, she said.
How often, have you heard NPR,
right.
you know, the once upon a time flagship of sort of smart, pinky in the air kind of people, right? Elitist little middle class people
hey,
like us.
Does that mean
so,
that we're pinky in the air kind of people?
Kinda.
Hey,
yeah,
I thought we were working class. What's going on?
No, we went from working class to middle class to pinky in the air.
Yeah.
I think
no,
we're
yeah.
she's getting better.
Kathy is middle class. We were working class.
Yeah, I am.
Scotty's
salt
pinky
of the
in the air.
Scotty's
no.
pinky in the air.
No. I am salt of the earth working class.
Oh.
And I'm.
So I will totally be the Italian
poverty.
Pinky in the air guy. I can
okay.
do it. Okay.
All right. Okay. We all.
I'm not claiming great wealth, but considering right. that the median household income in this country is so pitiful. I have to claim middle class.
There you go.
Yeah, rock on.
So what Scott was saying, I think, was that even NPR, which is sort of this intellectual font, or we've always thought of it that way, is sort of into this he said, she said stuff, where there's this false equivalence going
they
on
do this
and everything
all the
else.
Time. It's the sort of benefit of the doubt, balanced, you know, fair and balanced stuff that that we are just...
We're going to giggle while you talk.
I'm sorry.
Just keep going.
Yeah, it's
just
a
get it out.
We're back with Scotty Bryce.
There's going to be a lot of post-production then.
Oh, my God. I think you need to drink while you do that.
I'm drinking right now, and
there
I'll be drinking. Believe me, I'll be drinking during post-production. But that's the whole point, by the way, of this podcast, is that we eat and drink while Rome burns around us.
Ah. So that's the metaphor.
That's what I like to think
okay,
of.
Okay.
But yeah, no, and I mean, I single them out because I used to have a lot of respect for NPR.
Right.
And I still do. There's lots of really good programming.
Right.
But their new stuff has now for years been this shambles. Mm-hmm. Been this sense of, you know, and then, you know, Jeff Sessions said this or Richard Spencer did this. And it should, that should, if one, you shouldn't give them the benefit of the doubt. And two, that should be prefaced with racist Richard Spencer or, you know, Old South, you know, Democratic dinosaur, you know.
Did the governor
something
of Florida,
to give people context.
Seriously, yeah. Did the governor of Florida just have to declare a state of emergency? Because this guy was speaking on a Did I read that right?
Yeah, you did.
Because he's speaking on a campus. Well, when do you declare a state of emergency? Oh, hurricane, oh, flood, you know. Oh, Richard Spencer, and we don't know how to keep him out.
It's wringing our little hands.
Oh, yeah. My mind boggles.
No, so I just, when we talk about Trump fatigue, that's part of it, is that sense that we are just in the middle of this crap show. And how we get out, I have no idea. You know, a lot of us are like, oh, you know, Mr. Mueller, please work harder. You know, please do some overtime
that,
this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of a, it's almost like, oh my God.
Progress, the APV signal dog is telling us we're going to need to take a break.
All right, just a real quick point here, and that is I don't think we want Trump to get out, at least not right now. Because I don't want to see Pence in there. The thing with Trump is, you pointed out at the top of this show, is he's incompetent. And because of his incompetence, the whole schmeal, Congress, etc., they're not getting anything done. So not getting anything done is actually a positive thing in this particular state, right? You get Pence in there, things will start happening because he is actually competent.
I differ on that. Good. I think, you know, if you think about, I mean, in comparison to Donald Trump, yes. You know, Bubbles. By the way, did you all know that his nickname as a young man was Bubbles?
Pence's nickname?
Yes.
Michael Pence, Mr. Robot
yes.
Ken.
Pence. That would be Vice President Bubbles.
That would be the town in which there were no bubbles.
But Vice President Bubbles. He's the only guy Trump could get to take the job. Remember that when he couldn't find any of the Republican heavy hitters to do it because they all thought they were going to lose and were going to get in flames.
Why not Sarah Palin? Why didn't he tap to it? I really thought
because there's only so much room for crazy on that train, and Trump is the driver.
Yeah. No, I think that's very. Yeah, she would have grabbed too much of the limelight.
Yeah, she's prettier.
Wow.
I mean, they're both.
She's not a 10. She's not a 10 anymore. Have you seen my wife?
That's right.
Have you seen my daughter? Oh, my daughter. She's so hot. Oh, I'm sorry.
Something happened to Scott.
I'm sorry. Just channeling the president. No,
so
I mean,
you think Pence isn't that competent?
No, but more competent than Trump? Sure.
But
the problems that the Republicans have in Congress right now aren't just Trump.
Yeah,
it's the fact that they have a whole contingent of crazy people who they the reason they didn't get rid of Obamacare is because some of them wanted to go further.
Yeah.
Some of them wanted to get rid of wanted to tie it to getting rid of Medicare altogether and things like that. Mm-hmm. So I mean, I don't think Pence could bridge that particular.
But in a way, he's right in that Pence is probably competent enough and legitimate enough that people like heavy hitters in the Republican Party, if he moved up, would be like, oh. Now this guy we can work with.
Yeah.
You know, so they would jump on and, you know, that could be pretty dangerous.
All right, well, we are going to take a quick break and we will be back and we will finish up with the president and the national stuff. Burping here, excuse me. And
let's bring the dog back.
Yeah. Progress is sitting quietly by my side here. And we'll be back, and we're going to switch gears after that and talk a little about the election coming up in Virginia and our visit from the mayor. So, APV on the air. We'll be right back in a second. We'll be right back. guys, if you guys knew the bon mots that are dropping here during our breaks, while you listen to the
if
delightful,
you forget to edit it, delightful. They will have.
Oh no, there will be some severe and serious editing. This is APV on the air. Scott Price. I'm here with Kathy and Jack and Vance, and we have been talking probably for about 40 minutes about our president and the hell world that we now live in because of his election and of the people who are in power in our country. I guess we should all, obviously, you know, it is incumbent on us as progressives to blame the Democrats because part of this is their fault, you know. But I'm hearing that a lot from my friends on the left in regards to the election coming up here in Virginia, the November 7th election, which at the top of the ticket is Ralph Northam versus itinerant lobbyist Ed Gillespie. Republican bagman. The most recent polling shows that the election is tight as a...
Tight.
As a butt or whatever.
3%.
Oh, less. Difference. I think it was 1%.
1%.
Down to 1%.
Gillespie was up by 1%. 48, 47.
I think what we can take from that is that it is tight. I mean, I don't, you know, just the fact that it is.
It's a mom-off poll. I think,
it's
or something
tight.
Like that.
And so, you know, already the hand-wringing is begun and the blaming. And I spend time with people who work on the Northam campaign and who have been working for the Dems for a while, and there was an enormous amount of fear, frankly, that Ralph is not going to make it. Already the blame is starting to go around, so it's scary.
What are they indicating they plan to do within the next, you know, 3-4 weeks?
Well, tonight, the president, President Obama...
Is here.
I will tell you that, and this is my opinion, but I think it voices what a lot of people think. You know, Virginia has gone now, goes pretty regularly for Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
And we've...
On the presidential level.
Or at the statewide level, too. You know, most of the, you know, Bob McDonald was the first Republican governor in...
Quite a while.
Two terms, and then he was followed by another Democrat, so... They have a hard time, you know, winning statewide elections if people come out. The people look at that big swath of red, you know, in the South Side and in the Southwest Virginia and all, and also sort of the second ring of suburbs of Northern Virginia and, you know, the beach and stuff, or Chester, you know, around here, Henrico, Chesterfield,
right.
Hanover. And they say, oh, the Republicans, you know, this is a Republican state, but it isn't. You know, Northern Virginia is blue and getting bluer.
Richmond's blue, a lot of the beach, Norfolk.
But those people have to come out, and getting the African American community to show up for Ralph Northam, getting inner suburbs of NVA to get out. I mean, people will vote. I'm not worried that Ed Gillespie's going to chip into the African American vote. It's more that.
They've got to show up in numbers, and getting
the young people. And Ralph is not a super engaging candidate.
His commercials are so incredibly dull. So incredibly dull.
I mean, how far can you go with emphasizing that he's a really nice guy? You know,
and a doctor. It's just. Oh, I could just scream.
He likes kids.
He's a pediatric neurologist.
So
he's brilliant. He's kind.
Dull.
All of that stuff. But he's also a very middle-of-the-road Democrat.
Yeah. He's got a couple of pings. You know, from the perspective of the far left, and I don't want to suggest that I am in that camp necessarily, but from their perspective, they're sitting on their hands, and I think they're going to be inclined to sit on their hands because of a number of things. For one thing, Ralph Northam has not come out against the ACP or the NPP.
Yeah.
That's a big deal for some folks on the left.
I mean, it should be.
The pipelines.
Atlantic Coast pipelines.
The natural gas pipelines that they want to run through the Shenandoah Valley. And, you know, I mean, we, APV, put out a really remarkably good video that you can see on our website or on our YouTube page, which is really exceptional, and the production quality, I don't mind saying so myself,
yeah.
was...
Did you help with that, Scott?
I had a hand in that.
Okay.
I just wanted to make sure Harvey Weinstein about...
Oh, no! Get away from Kevin!
Not what I meant to say.
Oh, I've heard that guy's brilliant.
Yeah, oh yeah, no. Yeah. Between the two of us, yeah. A little grabby, but otherwise. And that's all going to end up on the floor. But no, I mean, you know, it's a real issue, and I understand it. But it's, to me, this also, doesn't it feel like a replay of last November? This, well, I don't like him because of this or that, or just,
right.
he doesn't energize
these sort
me.
Of pick and choose things.
So then we end up with Ed Gillespie,
yeah.
and they go,
yeah.
well, it's the Democrats' fault. It's like, no, sometimes being an adult and being, you know, politically mature means that you go, I'm going to vote for Ralph Northam, even though Ralph Northam is
yeah.
not good on all the things I want.
So,
here's
the interesting thing with Ralph Northam. Ralph Northam, I'll vote for him, and I'll probably actually like voting for him. I'd be okay with it. I prefer
yeah.
Perry.
Yeah.
Although, but I don't have any qualms about voting for Ralph Northam.
Oh,
I think
yeah.
he's
me
going to be
either,
a fine
and
candidate.
I don't want my criticisms of his commercials to read that way.
Right,
no,
right,
no,
exactly.
No.
So he's a good candidate. Well, he's a good politician. He's going to make an excellent governor, and let's be positive about that, because hopefully that's what's going to happen. Because the flip side to it, frankly, Gillespie is going to be a nightmare. We're going to have a state legislature that's going to be solid red, and then we'll have a governor who can sign off on any crazy shit they manage to pass. And they've got some crazy shit in the works, and I know Scott can enumerate some of the crazy shit they have in the works. But Rhonda Henning, our president,
yep.
last year's president, brought up a really good point. We were in a dialogue on social media. And we were talking to a libertarian who was saying, oh, I don't want to vote for Northam because, you know, he doesn't like the statues or something. And I was like, well, that's just stupid. And he was saying, you know, he's pandering to the base or something like that, which is even farther from the truth. But that's beside the point. And Rhonda came back with a really good point. And that is, listen, it's not just the governor. It's the fact that this particular governor is going to oversee the redistricting for the state of Virginia.
Right.
And if that goes south, you will not have Democrats in office for the foreseeable future,
yeah.
you know, or
yeah.
any controlling chamber for the foreseeable
future.
That'd
be future, another 10 years.
At least,
yeah.
right? And then the other thing she brought up, which I thought was really interesting and I had forgotten about entirely, was they are assembling as many states as they can so they can do their constitutional convention. They got 35. They only need two more before they can actually have a constitutional convention. That is to say, all of these states can get together and say, we want to rewrite the Constitution of the United States.
Yeah.
They got 35 Republican chambers right now, states.
Yeah.
And they effectively could get two more, and Virginia could be one of them, if we don't vote for Northam. So
right.
it's like,
yeah.
Northam may not be your ideal candidate. I don't care. You need to vote for him so we don't get all of this other very, very bad stuff. Think of him as a Trump surrogate. That's exactly what he is. So
well,
I'm off my high.
That's,
yeah.
That's all
that's
all fantastic.
That's exactly
too.
Right. And there's stuff, too, that because the Republicans have controlled the GA for a while, there's stuff that goes south as soon as you get a Republican governor. For instance, Trapp. Which is one of the reasons
right.
HPV exists, which is a targeted regulation against abortion providers. That's still on the books.
Right.
The governor
right.
gets to pick the Board of Health. Since we've had Terry McAuliffe, we've had a Board of Health that has interpreted TRAP in a much looser way. It can't take it off. They can't ignore it.
Yeah.
But it's the in our Virginia Constitution is it is against the law for same-sex couples to get married. Now that's superseded by the Supreme Court, but a Republican governor with a Republican General Assembly, they could, and with a Donald Trump Jeff Sessions Justice Department, they could simply say, well, we're just not going to do it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, we're just gonna back out all of that and follow our own, you know, beautiful Virginia way, as they like to talk.
Right.
And so that's the kind of stuff. So, yeah, I'm sorry that Ralph is not better on the ACA. And I appreciate the people who say you got to draw a line somewhere and you can't, and the whole, you know, lesser of two evils and stuff. I mean, there's a point there. But did last year not teach us anything?
Right.
You know, Ed Gillespie is not as idiotic as Donald Trump. That's worse, because he'll probably be an effectively dangerous Republican governor.
Right.
No,
well, there's
no,
a
no.
there's a false dilemma in there, too, in,
yeah.
in what you're saying, in that just because he's not particularly personable, you know, as a candidate and firing up the base and
he's
whatnot.
Personally,
doesn't make nice him actually a bad candidate.
No.
You know? So, you know, the lesser of two evils.
Running is not governing. I think
the lesser of two evils actually doesn't really necessarily apply.
Yeah. Unless
what you're actually looking for is somebody who's going to excite you.
Yeah. Right. And that's part of the problem, and maybe to go back to the top of the hour, that's part of the problem with our democracy, right? Is that
Trump excited a lot of people.
Right. We vote for the candidates that excite us, and just because you happen to be good on TV and can excite people doesn't necessarily mean you're any good at governing at all.
Yeah.
In fact, you can be a disaster, which is what we've seen.
Yeah.
A lot of us liked Barack Obama quite a bit, but I mean, he was very much, his candidacy was not necessarily, at least his original candidacy, was not built on significant policy stuff. Him and Hillary Clinton were probably about the same sort of middle-of-the-road things. And also, I mean, he was dealing with a crisis, you know, the economic crisis that the Republicans dropped
not
us into,
and
all of that. But, I mean, no, it was that he was eloquent, and he gave us a chance to dream about a better America and
He gave us that wonderful slogan, you know, hope.
And
after 8 years of Bush, you know, I would have voted for my grandmother anyhow. So, I mean, there was a lot of that going on, too.
I don't know. I feel like, you know, I mean, but also think about Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders, who is the most just wonky politician.
Yeah.
You know, this old Jewish guy in his 70s who just tells it like it is. He was absolutely adorable. But there's no, I mean, he's not, I would not describe Bernie as, you know, telegenic or charismatic, you know.
I was feeling the burn, though.
I felt the burn like nobody's business. Part of it is because he had great policies.
Yeah. I mean,
great
policies, and
he just kind of stood up and told the truth.
His personality
came through in a very authentic way. Radical.
Yeah. Right.
What I loved about him is he would not play the game. And I think, by the way, that's why some conservatives liked Trump. But they were such opposite polar opposites, is that Bernie would not fall into traps. You know, they would want him to, you know, well, what, you know, you think Mrs. Clinton is pretty? And he'd be like, that's a stupid question. I won't answer it.
Mm.
You know, whereas Trump would answer that question every second of the day. But no, he would not play those games. He said, I'm here to talk about this, and this, and you will not drag me off of these topics.
I think an unfortunate thing that could have revealed maybe a little bit about the nature of our cultural war would, if we would have had a true contest between Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump, it would have been really interesting to see which way the country would have gone. Because I think it would have been actually reasonably tough. I think Bernie Sanders would have pulled it out.
It would have been an interesting.
Yeah, but both of them are outsiders. Both of them coming from their own sort of deliberate spears of influence. I think Bernie Sanders would have had the upper hand for a variety of reasons. They would have both been outsiders, and that would have been really refreshing because then,
from very different angles.
Yeah, but you know, there's always that. In 2000, it would have been nice to have Bill Bradley versus John McCain.
Right.
You know, frankly.
Yeah. Right.
And the machine never gives us the outsiders because it is not set up to give
for
us
that.
The outsiders.
Right. Well, hence we have now Ralph Northam rather than Tom Perriello. Right.
Although, I mean, you know, be too quick to get what you want, because of a Sanders presidency with a Republican Congress.
Oh, could have been a stalemate.
Would have been a stalemate. And also, it
Carter
would have been.
Carter 2.0.
Yeah, it would have been that thing where they said, see, the progressives can't get anything done.
Well.
You know, I mean, there would be stuff he could do. For one thing, we'd have control of the friggin' Supreme Court, which don't even get me started.
They probably wouldn't have confirmed anybody. You would have been down to, like, you know,
Ginsburg, whoever
holding on out of sheer spite, you know.
And also, I mean, we loved Bernie, but we don't know. He might not have, you know, you don't.
Well, there are certain things that he could have come through and been a mess on, but for the most part, it can't, I'll just say this, it could not have been any worse than Trump.
I will give Hillary Clinton this. I think she was the best equipped out of everybody running to handle Russia at this point.
Sure.
You know?
And you
the
don't
Russia,
like her one little bit.
And I don't.
Are you talking about the Russia? If she
had become president,
the hacking thing, or
the whole everything involved an American Russian
relationship
right now.
Competency was not an issue. You know,
they would be seen as a
competent
threat if somebody wasn't, you know, over like stirring up the hornet's nest of North Korea. You know,
I think she would not be doing that. Yeah.
No, she's competent. She wouldn't have done
that. But it would have been that technocratic sort of presidency. You know, yeah. It would have been...
I could live with that right now. Yeah. I would be very happy.
That look, you know, seeing that in the rearview mirror, I'm like, oh, please.
Can we?
But also, it would have been... It would not have been... it wouldn't have been. It would have been the same crap. They'd be doing Benghazi right now.
Yeah. We need to go to a commercial.
We do, because that the was the Sound of Progress, the APV dog monitor who
just bit me.
He did not bite me.
I mean, it didn't break the skin.
No, that was a gentle nip reminding okay. our listeners. Stay tuned, and we're gonna wrap up in the next segment on APV on the Air, and we'll be right back. APV on the Air, and I'm joined tonight by Jack Johnson and Kathy and Vance, and we are talking about all sorts of stuff. Like many of our podcasts, there is a lot of lamentation and gnashing of teeth that goes on, and that's probably not going to stop for at least 3.5 more years.
I have a question.
Yes.
And off this sort of sheet that we're working off, the weird lefty spin on a Russia.
Yeah, I was wondering
what,
about that.
What is that, Scotty?
Well, I don't know if you've been there are a group of people that we know some of them.
Yeah.
Who basically think that the whole Russia investigation is they described as red baiting, which is of course silly because there are no reds in Russia anymore.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, it's an oligarchy, so right.
But the point they make, which is not without some truth, is that there are people who would like to gin up a conflict with Russia that would allow them to, you know, sort of run the old Cold War. Tunes, you know, bring back the old tunes.
So,
you know?
Do they think that the Mueller investigation is kind of spurious, or what's
yeah.
the notion?
Well, they think everything's conspiracy. They don't trust anything that comes out of the government. Yeah. So. And they're not completely wrong because all they have to do is say, you know, Iraq War or Vietnam or any of the things that our government has lied to us about.
Right.
So, yeah, you know, I mean, I'm with them up to a point, except it looks like that's just nonsense. At least in this particular case.
Well, I mean, I think there's some solid stuff going on. For one thing, I think there's investment money that was given to Trump from Russia. And lot of that is engendering this stuff.
Yeah, I think so.
There's concrete stuff happening.
Yeah,
I think
there's real stuff. We'll see what Mueller comes up with. A lot of people are like, oh, please, please. But I don't think a normal presidency would be demolished, right? Mm-hmm. But he'll do whatever he wants. If they indict his kids, he'll pardon them. If they indict, you know, people in his cabinet, that would destroy a presidency. That would end your presidency, right? And people would leave embarrassed, right? Not, you can't embarrass him. So he will hang on through the whole, you know, through this whole schmeal. And I don't know that they'll be able to get him. I think that what we have is a situation where there's an enormous amount of smoke and there's clearly fire, but unless he is literally on fire, they're not going to, they can't get rid of him.
And by they, you mean the Republican majority in the House. They won't. Not going to.
Yeah. It's highly unlikely.
Yeah.
Right. And we'll see, you know, and the Democrats are probably not going to win the Congress back in 18, you know?
Speculation on the Senate, you think they have a chance there?
The Senate is the same. This is the same contingent, you know, because they run in three contingents.
Yeah.
This is the same contingent from 2010.
So it means we have 24 contested seats that are Democratic.
Yeah, there's the Democrats
right.
have a
and so there's only
higher,
like 10, right, yeah. or something. Yeah.
Now there are people, you know, I mean, John McCain's not going to be a senator much longer, frankly. I mean,
right.
we don't know what the timetable on that is, but he's
right.
apparently terminal, and there are a number of Republicans who aren't running anymore.
Right.
Now, could the Democrats pick those seats up? Maybe. They are statewide, you know? I mean, maybe, but they would have to, they have to keep all of theirs.
And gain
yeah. seats. But they wouldn't have to gain a lot, you know?
They only need, what, 4 or 5? How many seats do they actually need?
They need 2.
Is that it?
Well, the GOP has, I think it's 52, 48, and then, of course, they have the vice president.
So 3, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they could lose that. They could lose 3.
Yeah, that's true.
With Trump, you know, throwing his hand and his crew throwing their hands in the elections, getting behind people that support them, that also works, you know, in the favor of
the Republicans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It works against them, you
right.
know, because
yeah.
'cause Trump is coming, you know, is or his people are you know, jumping in behind
although
like,
what's
some
his
crazy
name that he supported
there.
In Georgia lost.
Yeah, but
yeah,
he
but
didn't.
No, that's what I'm saying is
but
that
also, gosh,
he's pushing some crazy candidates up against some legitimate Republican candidates.
That's some of that he's
talking
their
about.
Vote he's
and,
talked
yeah,
about
that
primarying
might help
people
yeah, it's
and
help.
Stuff like
that.
That
might help a little.
But he has no political sense, and the people around him are not particularly savvy either. I mean, he's a bomb thrower.
Mm.
You know, and he's kind of wrecking the Republican Party.
Yeah.
But where that'll end, and in a world of voter suppression and, you know, vote rigging and all of the things that we know about, will it matter anyway?
Right.
You know, and of course, if people don't show up, if people don't come out and vote.
Right.
So, yeah, but the Russian thing is fascinating because there is this sense that it's sort of photo opposite, that somehow, you're like, so are you telling me that you don't think that Trump colluded? It's like, no, it's all spurious, it's all, you know, and or they'll come back and go, well, Hillary this, or, you know.
This is the left saying this.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know, and it's,
yeah.
it is.
Certain part of
the yeah,
right,
know,
exactly.
Yeah, whatever,
yeah.
You know, labels you want to.
Well, I'm wondering if it's sort of the old guard, and they are, and maybe this is where we are with this, is that it's the old guard, and they're very conscious of basically the red baiting and so forth that went on throughout the Cold War period, all the way up through the 80s, really.
I think that they are afraid that in response to Trump, that people will fall for the same things that they've fallen for in the past.
Mm.
And again, I think they have a point there.
Yeah.
But this sort of skepticism, but there's a way to put that all together that, I don't know. They seem to be willfully looking for a way that it works for them. That it has to be that it's all
a
it's the Democrats' fault,
around.
It's deep government's fault, it's this, it's that. It can't be the fact that the Republican Party lost its mind and a segment of American politics has simply gone completely off the rails.
Or that a segment has finally found an advocate that had never had an advocate before.
Yeah. Although he's
you know?
Such a bad advocate because he's not help. He's not,
no,
never going
right.
to get what they want from
but he's
him.
What they want.
Yeah, they really want spectacle.
I mean, it's a sort of
yeah,
right.
Yeah,
it's
like,
I keep thinking of this guy I used to have as a friend who I would go to if I needed to repair something, right? And he would sit in his apartment and he'd watch Worldwide Wrestling Federation,
mm-hmm.
all of that stuff. And he was all about sort of the flash and spectacle and everything else. And he was, you know, your basic Republican kind of guy, one of the, I guess, deplorables or whatever. And that's exactly what it is. It's all about whatever gets the loudest noise, whatever makes the loudest noise, whatever's, yeah, it's kind of an entertainment, but there's a certain level of vulgarity that he found totally acceptable, and he was like appreciating it.
It's entertainment.
Yeah, yeah.
But also, there's yeah, they're not, these people aren't hoity-polloity, and there's the thing that people were saying, you know, during the election, you know, that he says what we're thinking. You know, he can say it because he's so rich.
Yeah, there's this kind of
faux
authenticity yeah. that gets associated with him by this crowd.
It's a weird sort of cult of personality for
yeah.
someone who has such a minimal personality.
And yet he can't talk very well either. I mean, just at a basic skill
yeah.
level. His
but
vocabulary is probably, what, like 100 words?
It's not good.
Yeah.
But here's the thing.
Very good.
This is where I kind of agree with some of the things. It's like, we can't, it is very seductive to simply fall into, God, he's, you know, to a conversation of how stupid is Donald Trump type thing.
Right.
And there's other stuff like, what is so wrong with our country that the fail safes that used to exist to keep demagogues like him out? You know, it's not like we always had great presidents. I mean, I don't like it when people do that thing where, you know, they sort of, this sort of relativism that says, well, what about Reagan or what about Nixon?
We're going to skip ahead a couple of glasses of wine, I mean minutes, to our panel discussing the intricacies of the Electoral College system.
If you are in Wisconsin, your vote counts so much more
this
than if
exactly
you are in
California. Or New York,
yeah. And we have seen concentrations people on the left in the very places that have much less power in the Electoral College. This actually echoes something that happened once before, though. In the early 1900s, the same thing went on, only then instead of a red state, blue state divide, it was a urban versus rural divide within states. And at that point, there was the same problem with city legislatures versus state governments, and state legislatures were drawing districts so that cities had no power.
Yeah, let's get
at
to
that
point.
Now. Yeah, the big problem is that your vote counts a lot more if you live in Wisconsin or any of the other rural red states.
Right.
And I don't think a lot of people on the left are going to move there.
No.
And
yes.
So,
I mean, if you want,
I don't think a lot of people have heard this.
Well,
I don't think they've figured it out yet.
The weirdnesses of how American government is put together.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, I mean, California has two senators. New York has two senators,
mm-hmm.
and then Montana and the Dakotas
mm-hmm.
and Idaho have eight senators.
Yeah, so I think a lot of people don't understand that the number of electors you get is your senators plus
your House of Representatives,
which means that if you are in a state that has like one representative, because that's as low as you
say
can go,
New Hampshire or Rhode Island, say.
Yeah.
You get
those three votes, and you are well overrepresented.
Yeah.
And so that's not one person, one vote. You know, this is echoing the system that was put in place by the founders who didn't trust the public.
Yeah.
But the weird
thing is that demagogue voted in based on this system, which is supposed to prevent demagoguery.
The electors were supposed to be these wise people that looked after things. They weren't supposed to be people who got to go be an elector because, you know, they've
donated
or done a lot of grunt work for a particular person in, you know, state house or state senate. So,
well, and also we have a winner-take-all system, too.
Yeah.
Which has some good points and bad points.
I would
but
love
in places
to see
like Wisconsin,
IVR,
Michigan.
Instant voter runoff or something like that. That would change the democracy in this country, and it would make it much more of a democracy than what it is right now.
Yeah, or just, you know, just like an honest apportionment of the vote would make me happy.
Yeah.
You know, if 60% of a state is one party and 40% is another, then that's what you should see getting elected.
Right.
And that is not what we're seeing getting elected right now because of the gerrymandering we're seeing.
And it's tough, and it's hard to ask people to keep coming out when often it doesn't seem like their vote counts. And on that cheerful note,
please come out and vote for Ralph Northam.
If you do
not come out, there is a census 2020 and there will be gerrymandering if this is a Republican governor.
Yeah.
And we will suffer for 10 more years.
Although I should point out that the Alliance for Progressive Virginia does not in fact endorse candidates.
Oh no, sorry.
But Jack speaking as a private individual in this case. But the point is, you should vote. And if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably you should definitely vote.
Yes, absolutely.
Unless you're a conservative just wants to torture themselves or
always vote. Commercial.
Yeah. Otherwise, I want to thank my guests, Jack, Kathy, and Vance. This has been fabulous, and this is much more fun than just me sitting here talking. And hopefully we will do more of this. I hope you guys enjoyed the soup.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Very good soup.
And, you know, and I think, and the beer and the wine seems to have gone down well. So we will be back with a podcast. We try to do them every week. And we will certainly be doing, we will have more before the election. And we'll talk more about the election. And we'll definitely, you know, we didn't get a chance to talk about Mayor Stoney's visit.
Oh, right.
No, yeah,
but
yeah,
we will talk about that in the in another
podcast. Got the mayor.
Yeah, we were very happy about that. And good. He seemed like he had a good time. Yeah.
Well, that's
and, it doesn't matter. He's a professional. He knows what his job is. So, thank you all very much.
Thank you, Scotty.
This is APV.
Thank you.
Yeah. APV on the air, saying goodbye, and Progress, the APV sound dog, tells me that it is time for us to go. Cheers. Have a great time.